What's up, Polo people? Welcome to the 46th episode of the Northside Polo Podcast. And you thought we'd have the 46th episode come and go and it wouldn't be anything special. Well, you're wrong, because we have a special guest host and interviewee this episode, and it is Olson of Boston, formerly of Los Angeles Bike Polo. Good to have you on, Olson.
Yeah, sorry Liam's not here. I'll bring him a six-pack of 60-minute IPA. It's his favorite.
Dang. Okay, yeah, he'd probably love that. And we also, of course, have Alex, who is a good person to have on the podcast. How you doing, Alex?
I'm pretty good. I'm a little cheesed that you let the cat out of the bag that Olson is also the guest. I thought it'd be really funny to try to pretend like we had someone else come on, like we just got him to host, and then, you know, we could have a different guest on. That'd be pretty funny.
In hindsight, you're absolutely right. That would have been much better. But you know what? It's going to be hilarious when we cut to the interview and we introduce him again.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, yeah.
We could edit it. I don't know. You'll have to wait and see as the listener.
We won't.
No, probably not. Should we jump into the news?
Yeah. Yeah. So first up, the Tropic Classic came and went. Shout out to Charlie, Tina, and Owen for taking it down this year. Tina also won MVP, but also huge shout out Dev, Beto, and Joey for second place. And of course, Toronto's own Patty with Diego and T, who are both prolific friends of the pod, for coming in third and rounding out that podium.
Yeah.
That's stacked. Yeah.
There's a lot of friends of the pod and Connect Bike Polo on here. Like, yeah. I mean, obviously Patty's a friend of the pod because Northside alum. And then we got Diego and T. They've both been on. And yeah. I mean, Dev did cast an episode of Connect Bike Polo 4. Like, this is pretty cool. You know, maybe more people should want to come on our podcast. Heads up. It's good for your polo career. It was on a stunning tournament, though. Like, just tuning into the live stream, San Juan does an amazing job, and I bet Olson can speak a little bit better to this, but it's such a killer tournament, and the polo was competitive as ever, enjoyable to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it was stacked. I mean, this tournament's going to be more and more stacked as the years go on, and I remember saying I remember passing on this tournament a lot, and just because of money. Mm-hmm. And last year finally I went, and it was totally worth it. If you've never gone to this tournament, sign up for the lottery. It's so worth it. So like, there was like three or four Boston players who went who weren't even on teams. They just like went for hangs.
Yeah,
there's a lot of hangs there.
I signed up for the lottery this year, didn't even make the wait list.
Same.
I gotta get my name in the hat because it's a once in a lifetime thing, it seems. And some of these people get to come year after year after year. It's unbelievable. They're so lucky. Yeah. Would you guys say this is like one of the marquee, like I almost want to call them major tournaments that are out there these days as far as competitiveness in North America?
I don't know competitive. I mean, it's weird because I've never been to the tournament to really comment on it, but just the caliber of,
seem really good.
Yeah, the caliber of all the players there is like about as good as it gets. And I feel like just as far as iconic tournaments go, this has to be one of them.
Yeah, I'd say it's one that people circle on their calendars for sure.
What other tournaments come to mind when you think of things like as iconic as Tropic Classic? For me, it's like Commonwealth Classic and smack in the middle. And like, that's the list.
I thought that was your attempt to transition to our next news story. And I was like, stop.
No, it's not quite there yet.
I was like, that will not stand for this sacrilege.
SBs doesn't happen anymore, but that's always been on the radar. I've never played.
If we get the permits, Nesby will be back and it'll be better than ever.
Nesby.
Boston has to come to that.
I mean, yeah, Fall Ballin was pretty competitive for a number of years. That was a pretty big tournament back in the day, but it's been on a hiatus. So,
yeah, if we can get a permit, that'll be back too.
SF back in the day had the Ball Whackers Ball, which was like pretty dope. And then there was an Arizona tournament that was always hot. It was called the Desert Polo Invite.
Nice. Yeah, it's sick having you on the podcast, and you know all the, like the Southwest tournaments and people we don't know, so it's really making a well-rounded one. So this next piece of news here is Rumble by the River dates have been announced. This is a tournament we always try to pump up on this podcast, really gas it up, because it is a lot of fun. I help organize it, and friend of the podcast, former guest Justin, also is the head organizer. The dates are May 20th and 21st. It's hosted in Queon, Quebec. Now you can show
that's
up.
Ottawa. That's Ottawa.
Ottawa, yeah.
It's like 15 minutes outside of Ottawa.
More like 50, but yeah. But it's, you can show up on Friday the 19th. You can play pickup all day the 22nd. So it's really like a 4-day thing. But officially, the tournament is going to be the 20th and the 21st. But we play pickup all night because we decide when the lights turn off.
And this is the camping tournament. And yeah, you can camp 100 meters or about 150 yards from the court in the park. And it's amazing.
It's pretty sweet. Last year was pretty competitive, actually. I mean, like, that winning team, Charlie, Patty, Elijah, like, that's a pretty strong crew right there. We had Lefty Will of Call Me Daddy there.
Not even make the final? No, they lost in the final.
No, they came in third.
No, they came in third.
Mark Asseltine and Wes and Justin.
Yeah.
That's the final.
And so now that we have you hostage here, can I ask why Boston hasn't come to this tournament yet? And if you're going to fix that,
I was definitely thinking about it. You guys put out that sick video and I was like, oh, that looks so dope. And I love camping, and camping and polo seems like a no brainer. But now it's like, now this season is so congested with all the tournaments that it's just like, yeah, it's going to be pretty tough to pull out.
You don't want to come back from NAs and go to Canada the next weekend?
Yeah, it's just straight from NAs. Just jump on a plane to Ottawa.
Yeah. Flights from Mexico City to Toronto are pretty cheap.
Oh, so I've heard.
All right. What about this last piece of news, Alex? You want to talk about this one here? You're the one who put this on the outline.
Yeah. So the World Hardcourt Bike Polo Championship Association governing body group. I'm not really sure how that works. That would be a good interview to have in the future to figure out how that works. The folks from Perpignan that seem to organize everything, or the people that help them, they've announced today, as of the recording of this podcast, that the wild card format has been announced. I think we've announced before about when Worlds was happening and everything, but they did sort of clarify the wild card process today, which I think a lot of people didn't. I don't think it was ever set in stone what that was going to be. So they clarified it, and I'll just run through it here. The wildcard tournament will take place on Wednesday, August 23rd. It's going to consist of 20 teams of four players who will compete on four courts for seven slots in the main tournament. And it's going to be a Swiss tournament. So it's just a Swiss round. Everybody, you know, winners play winners. You play people on the same record as you, and the top seven go. There will be tiebreakers if necessary. So
that's sick, because the worst part of Swiss rounds is the tiebreakers, because it comes down to like opponent, like strength of record.
Yeah.
So if you played against better teams and you have the same record as someone else, you get in. But the head-to-head death matches will be pretty sweet for teams on the bubble, like that, like 13th and 14th place team. It'll be pretty cool to watch those.
I have a feeling this is going to be, I feel like the wildcard tournament is going to be unreal. Like, this could be a really tough tournament.
Could be a lot of fun. You only need to come in the top third to get into Worlds, which is pretty cool.
That's a lot better than I thought. I actually thought it was uncapped. Like, I thought if they had 80 teams show up, it's like, well, only two of you make it in. And I thought it was just this like ruthless thing. This seems, you know, this makes more sense, but
yeah, it'll be on every like region to kind of decide how those spots are allocated. So look to NAH for that announcement anytime after NAs, probably, I'd imagine, after they decide who wants to go.
Yeah. I also have a feeling, just with the general, like watching how dominant and good Europe are, I have a feeling that the European teams that make the trip are going to be pretty dang good.
We'll see. We'll see about that. I'm not calling out any Euro teams, but if I'm there, I'm getting one of those top spots. Okay.
Olsen, have you had the pleasure of playing against many European players?
Yeah, I played a tournament in Portugal. That was super fun. It's the way it was described to me is that it's like what Puerto Rico is to North America.
Okay.
They have a tournament on the southern coast of Portugal, like in October.
Oh, sweet.
And that was super rad. Weird format. I didn't do that well. So I could say, yeah, they're really good.
Let's jump to our interview here. And I mean, he's already with us right now, but we're going to break it down and send you over to the interview we did before we recorded these outside pieces, because Olsen had some pretty insightful things to say. And you're going to enjoy it. So have fun. Here you go. Olsen, welcome to the podcast. It's been a long time in the making, and I'm just excited to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I'm actually a huge fan of the pod. I feel like I kind of know you guys already.
That's sweet. It's always cool to hear that people actually out there are listening and enjoying the podcast. I mean, we see like how many listens we get, but we don't know if it's, you know, they just listen for 3 minutes and turned it off, or if they actually listened all the way through. So it's cool to know that you're out there listening to it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I also listen to a lot of podcasts, and I feel like I get to know the people that I listen to, but then it's really weird. It's even more disconcerting, I can say, being on the other end of it and playing pickup in a club and trying to tell a story, and everyone that I have never met before is like, yeah, we know. Like, they're like, you talked about that on the podcast. And I'm like, oh, fuck, I just met you guys.
I find it like the worst is when you are listening to a podcast, you enjoy it, you listen to it for years, and then someone shows you a picture of the host.
Yeah.
And you're just in shock about how could that be the face of the voice I've been listening to for the past 3 years. I can't. And every time you hear them, the picture of the person you had, it's just ruined.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't meet us.
Don't. If you can avoid it, I'd recommend avoiding it. But let's talk about Olsen here. So Olsen, I'll start us just off with a low ball here, an easy one for you. But how long you been playing polo for? How'd this whole thing get started? Because you've obviously, you're quite a storied player at this point, known far and wide. But where did the legend begin?
So I started playing polo like in 2011, late 2011. It was the year Worlds was in Seattle or NAs was in Seattle. I don't remember. So I used to go on like these like kind of crazy group rides back in LA. And we would just kind of like ride around midnight. It was called like the Midnight Riders is what they were called, actually. It was like this crazy group ride. And we would ride around a bunch. And I went on this ride. And these guys that lived in this warehouse in South Central took us on this big ride. And then afterwards, we went back to the warehouse and set up mini bike polo. Mm. It was like 12-inch bikes, whatever, with like 2-foot mallets.
What?
And I had like a ton of fun. And I kept badgering them because their warehouse was right next to my house. And I kept badgering them. I was like, yo, when would we do that again? And I was like, rad, I want to do that again. And finally, one of my best friends now, Donnie Pepper, was like, hey, man, we're not playing mini bike polo this week, but everyone's doing something else in the desert. I don't know what they were doing. But we're going to play regular bike polo at this location. You should come by. You can borrow my bike. Mm-hmm. And I played. The first time I got there, it was kind of wild. I get there and I'm just watching people play. They're inside this chain link tennis court. And I go up and my friend Donnie Pepper, he has the ball right next to me on the other side of the chain link fence. And someone comes and just skid checks him. He gets lifted off his bike. He slams into like the fence. The fence starts rattling in my face. And then he lands, hops twice and takes off with the ball still. And I'm just like, what the fuck? Fuck this. Like, this is ridiculous.
This isn't mini bike polo.
Yeah, exactly. It's nothing like mini bike polo. But I don't know. I borrowed his bike. And then, like, I was kind of shy back then. So, like, I was, like, just, like, kind of, like, still, even though he was, like, yeah, I'll just borrow my bike, whatever, I was still kind of nervous to ask him to borrow his bike for every game. Mm. So, actually, like, I volunteered at a bike co-op at the time. And I went to the co-op and just, like, scrounged together a bike from what I saw everyone else doing.
I feel like that's a common thread with beginner players. Like, they're always nervous, like, oh, I don't have a bike, I don't want to borrow stuff. I think every single club ever is like, we want you to come to pickup. Like, you can borrow a bike. That is not, I don't think there's any clubs where people are like, like new players at rookie night, like they don't have a bike. Like, you're always, people are welcome everywhere. Like, that's not, you know, but I know new players all have that like anxiety until they get their own bike.
Yeah, and like being on the other side of that now, where like I'm an established player, and like I'm always happy to let someone borrow my bike, and it's like, you know, it's a pretty nice bike, and like I'm just like, yeah, dude, take it, like it's all yours. Mm. So it's so funny thinking back, like when I was just so nervous to ask someone to borrow my bike.
It's because people don't realize, like, if you're coming from outside bike polo and you're used to, I don't know, like a roadie scene and everyone's riding their $7,000 carbon featherweight bikes and you're thinking, what if I crash? Especially watching bike polo, you're like, I'm going to crash. Yeah. But they don't realize we just huck our bikes around and that's just the norm. So,
yeah, it's like, this is made of steel. Like, if you go fast, if you're confident enough to go fast enough on your first game that you can break my bike, then you're a prodigy, and like it's worth whatever the repair was to get you in the polo.
So Olsen, how did you transition from being like, this is crazy, building this bike in the co-op, to continuing to come out for like what, 12 years now, it sounds like?
yeah, you know, from there it was just kind of a natural progression. I just played like all the time, like as much as I could, really. And they stopped playing right after that because it was Worlds 2011. They were poloed out. So I was actually really bummed right after I started because like there was very little polo to be had. But I remember like I would like when I was riding home, I would like solo polo with a ball on my ride home. I'm actually not a huge proponent of solo polo, but thinking back, like I actually did a fair bit of it. And
it has its time and place.
Yeah.
Especially for beginners. It's, I think, yeah, important to learn skills.
Yeah. I mean, I don't solo polo that much anymore, but maybe I should. But like really, I just like kept playing as much as I could, like a ton. I was a decent biker already. So like it was just learning team sports, like the main thing. I had no idea, no court vision. No idea how to pass. I couldn't like basic plays. Like I didn't like draw and dump was like when I figured it out, I was like, oh, you could do that. It's amazing. Like really tough for me in that sense, but the bike handling stuff wasn't too bad. I was already pretty fast on my bike.
Nice.
And I think I was like bad for like 3 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And then like by the third,
I think everybody
year,
is.
But the third or fourth year, yeah. I think that's when people either turn the corner or they plateau or yeah. By that third or fourth year, I was like hitting quarterfinals, like, oh wow, like, oh, I beat these vets from like the rival club that, you know, I didn't expect
nice
to be.
Yeah. Like, you're still in LA at that point?
I've been in LA for pretty much my entire polo like career. Oh, that's such a dumb way to describe it.
Not the polo life.
Yeah, I'd rather say like polo life. Until about like April of last year.
Okay. Oh wow. Big change, right? You moved all the way up to the Northeast in Boston, which is a whole other style of club, I'm sure. And that's kind of one of the questions I had is, has there been like a dramatic shift? Have you had to kind of adapt to the Boston way? I don't even know really the style in LA. So it'd be hard to know if there's a difference.
I could tell you, LA, we play on like smaller courts and it showed in like my personal play style. It's just like a lot of like picking your way through traffic in like really small spaces.
Mm.
A lot of like real like small technical ball skill because you're just like trying to move it around in these pretty confined spaces. And when I got to Boston, it was just like they play on one of the nicest courts I've ever seen.
But it's huge.
It's actually not that big. It's
oh, really?
Like 130, I think. 130 or 140.
I don't know how that compares to Canadian.
That's feet.
Units.
It's feet. And
it's not as big as Montreal, Alex.
Oh, really? So it's actually smaller than...
Slightly smaller than Montreal's court.
So that's a pretty small hockey rink then.
Yeah, it's not like a... It's like...
That,
I think it's
sounds
a
perfect,
really
actually
good size, personally.
So what's the Boston style like? Then you kind of gave us the small, close, technical LA style, but then the Boston style, how is it different?
Oh, man. They have some huge rips. I know you guys have... talk about big rips on the pod all the time, but
yeah,
Boston has huge rips. Like I'll tell you a funny story. When I first moved here, one of like the vets here, Nick Germany, he scored a goal on me from like what would be over half court in LA. And I was like, oh, okay, that was a lucky shot. Like, okay, he hit that hole. Hell, okay. And then he kept doing it. And I was like, and I started reading, I was like, oh no, this is just his normal shot. Like he just score from there all the time.
Yeah.
And I've actually, I've learned a lot from them in terms of my shooting. I was back in LA like 2 weeks ago, which is why we couldn't record earlier. But I remember scoring a goal from like full court in LA, which is like not even half court in Boston. And everyone in my old club was like, oh shit. Like, cause it's just like, you know, when you hit the ball just right, it echoes right. Yeah, it just moves. You feel it leaving the mallet. You're like, okay. And just my shot has gotten better, like just from being in Boston. Someone came up to me at a tournament recently and was like, and asked me, like, dude, how do you hit the ball so hard? Which I guess it's really funny to me because like, yeah, move to Boston.
The water, I
like,
guess.
Yeah.
Because I'm just not like a big shooter. In fact, they heckled me a ton when I got there because I had no big shot.
Ah.
Oh, yeah.
They were like, what did they say? At first they're heckling me so much about anytime I had the ball, they're like, oh, he has too much space. He has no idea what to do. It was kind of true. I was kind of spazzed out because I was like, just had so much space.
Mm.
It's funny because Toronto, we normally play on like a really, really big hockey rink, which is only going to get bigger this year. But because we don't have our regular court, I've been playing in like the tiniest, crappiest little parking lots, like the tiniest courts. And when we went and played like qualifiers this year on hockey rinks again, it was like this relief. Like I was like, oh, I have so much room to do everything. Like all the play style and moves and everything that I haven't been able to do on these tiny little hockey rinks or half tennis courts and stuff. I'm like, wait, I can just chuck the ball and go get it and then have enough space to beat the second defender too. Like yeah. It was just kind of like, oh wow, this is, I remember what it's like to play with all this room.
Right.
What I used to say was like, you have so much room to express yourself. It's kind of nice.
Also room to make mistakes.
Yeah. Things like, just happen like a little more delayed on a big court too. Like you need a bit more patience to mm-hmm. move in there, right? Because it's so big. Olsen, I'm kind of curious, just for the listeners, like you've had a long career and I don't really have your resume in front of me, but are there any tournaments that you've had good placements in that you could mention just so people know like kind of where you've been and what you've been up to?
I'd won Smack in the Middle in 2017.
That's a big deal.
2016. Yeah, and Smack in the Middle is always a really hard tournament to win. It always has been. People use it as like a dress rehearsal for qualifiers on the West Coast.
I feel like it was the unofficial NA championship last year.
Yeah, it was stacked last year. It was I was really bummed I couldn't make it. I think I've won like a couple of other smaller tournaments. I won one in Houston with Diego.
Has Diego ever lost a tournament in Houston?
No, I don't think so. I mean, no, he's lost tournaments in Houston. You talked about it when he was on, how he lost.
Also, I can rattle off a few that you're missing here. I mean, number two at Tropa Classic last year.
Oh, they said wins.
Well, I mean, that's still a really good placement finals. In a competitive tournament. You came first at the Eastside qualifiers this past season.
Oh, shit. That's right. That's a huge one, right?
Which is a big tournament win to win.
Eastside is probably like, yeah, that my biggest win.
And a second place at Commonwealth Classic, which is nothing to slouch at. That's becoming like East Coast Smack in the Middle these days, it seems like. So
yeah, I'll be honest. Yeah. I didn't know. I had never heard of you before. And then we were watching the Tropa Classic last year. And it seems like since then, every tournament that you've gone to or that's been big and has live streams, it's like you're in the final.
Yeah, Tropa Classic. It was funny because like after so long of not playing and I didn't have a good qualifying season, like 2 years, 2019 or 2018. And then 2020, I was going to play Smack in the Middle with like Bob Delgado and David Frankhauser from Snake
You can
Oil.
Say you were going to win Smack in the Middle 2020. Like,
yeah, we were going to win it. We were going to try to win it. And then obviously the pandemic happened and I, you know, everything was on pause for so long. And I felt like I had made like real big strides in 2019. So I felt like really good for 2020. I was like, okay, I'm going to make moves this year. I've said that every year for like 4 years, just for the record.
Oh, us too.
Yeah. Do you guys know, I just remember saying that in like 2016 or something like that. It was 2018. I said that.
It's so hard to know, especially as a player who's on the come up and like maybe more of an intermediate player trying to become like a top level player who has a chance to win tournaments. It's so hard to know how big the gap is between you and the people you think you want to beat until you're out there and you're trying. I find it very hard to perceive because they do a lot of small things that you just don't even realize. Yeah. Like, oh, I can dribble the ball on both sides. I can endo turn. I can hit big rip. I hit all the boxes. Why can't I win? But there's like a lot of small things that seem to add up.
Me, personally, when I think what separates that intermediate player from that elite player is like something that's kind of intangible. It's just literally like court awareness and bike mm-hmm. positioning.
Yeah.
I always tell people it's like it's everything you do off the ball when you're not like when you don't have the ball on offense. It gets a lot more complicated to figure out what the right like it's a lot less obvious what the right play is when you don't have the ball in your hands. And like same thing on defense. Like if you're like, obviously, you know, playing goalie, it's kind of obvious, like block the shot. But on top of like, when you're in that number two position and you're like, do I block the pass? Do I play double goalie? What way do I face? Like, how far out is too far out? Like, there's a lot, it becomes a lot more nuanced. Like, everything becomes more nuanced. And that's where, like, the little decisions, like what you're saying, like court awareness and decision making, like, it's hard to practice or even explain to people what will make someone better, but you really feel it when you play against people.
Yeah, it's like you, it's like stuff that, like, you know, it's like players, like, for example, like Pete Abram or Diego, no one denies they're some of the best players in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not, like, really flashy in any way. Like, you know, they're not doing endo turns or endo pivots, but I think their court awareness is just top tier. Like, they just know where to be at all times. You're not going
to catch them. I don't think it's controversial to say that probably all three of us can endo pivot better than those two. Like, I don't even think that's a controversy, but if you were to rank, I mean, just look at the results, you know, like the results speak for them. Yeah.
But also, like, Diego and Peter are some of the best shooters out there. Like, the efficiency on their shots is on another level, and shooting is a premier skill in bike polo. Turns out you need it to score goals.
Yeah.
So we're talking a lot about skills and strengths here, and I'm just curious, what do you think are kind of like your signature skills? If you had to kind of say, like, what it is that's your bread and butter, what would you say that is? What are you still working on too?
Oh, yeah, I've been working on my shot. I wanted to get it, like, bigger, stronger, harder.
More wind up or faster release?
I try not to wind it up too bad. I used to have a much bigger wind up. Now no one gives me any crap about my wind up, so I'm assuming it's gotten under control.
Could just be Boston too, though.
Yeah, it could just be Boston. It could be other people that have worse winds up in the club that make me look better somehow. Yeah. When I first started out, I used my speed as a crutch a lot, I felt like.
Mm-hmm.
And evolving out of that was pretty tough. So, like, my speed is still definitely one of my assets, like one of my main playing styles. I just like to, I'm not scared to burn someone on the outside,
mm-hmm.
if that's what I need to do. Nowadays, I try to be a little more methodical. I really want people to, like, pick their poison when they play against me. I'm either gonna force them to defend me, or I'm gonna draw space for my like, try to draw double coverage, so
yeah,
with my shot or something, so I can, like, draw some space for my teammates.
There's nothing more satisfying than when the defense covers you and you don't even have the ball.
Yeah,
like, I'm like mission accomplished. I'm gonna stand in the corner.
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's been an honor.
My favorite is, like, you go around for a drop pass and your teammate doesn't pass to you, but both the players follow you instead.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And your teammate just has a free shot and the ball now. And it's just like, oh, that's a lot of respect. Let's do that again.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever gotten that before. I mean, maybe in pickup, but I don't think that's ever happened at a tournament.
People just aren't respecting you enough then.
Yeah.
You got to play in some softer working. Tournaments, okay?
Yeah.
Then maybe that happened at the thaw or something.
Yeah. But now that the scouting report is out, it'll happen.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of people say Olsen is one of the best defenders in North America. Like, just your ability to stay in front of people and not let like on the other end, like, defensively, like, not let people get by is the one. I've heard people say this guy's formidable. Would you agree with that? Or, like, and what's your approach? Like, why are people saying this about you?
So my approach to defense has a lot to do with those stats that I sent you.
Okay.
We'll definitely get into that.
We're going to be chatting about that. That's the next question, Olsen.
Okay. Well, let's bring it up now then.
Okay. Let's talk about it.
Well, sorry. First of all, do you agree that you're a good defender?
I do agree that I'm a good defender. For sure. I feel like you have one goal on defense, prevent shots to your goalie or your goal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The way I describe it to rookies is like, yo, you're herding cats out there. Bikes are incredibly hard to control in tight spaces. Like, that's why we do endo pivots and, like, all this stupid shit, just so we can make our bike, like, that much more agile. So I just really feel like you just push your players to the outside edges, like, get in front, like, don't give people lanes in front of the net. Like, that's, like, it's super easy, but, like, you have to think about the person on offense wants the lane to the net.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, like, my core philosophy for defense.
This sounds so much like a basketball philosophy. It's like, where are the high percentage spots on the floor? How can we defend those and give them the low efficiency spots on the floor? And like, so many defenses are built, like, take away the three-point line and the rim, and leave everything else because that's not as efficient, right?
And then obviously if they're there, contest it when they're there.
Yeah.
But
don't sacrifice the other stuff to contest that. And I think bike pool is the same way. Like if we can get people bad angle shots from far away, like let's keep doing that. That sounds like a great plan to me.
I was unbelievably happy reviewing the Fresno games that I like the video of our Fresno games. Cause I remember thinking I played really badly on defense when we played against Hammersley. And when I go back and watch it, every time I'm covering him one-on-one, he's taking backhands on the outside at a low angle.
That's a shot though.
I mean, it's a real shot. Like I remember feeling like he was just cooking me every time we played, but I'm like, that's a shot that I think if I'm one-on-one against a player of Chris's caliber and I'm at least making him take a difficult shot, I'm happy with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, Chris is one of the best shooters in the country. Like if you want to give him a shot, if you have to give him a shot, give him that shot. Cause you don't want to do it on a forehand. Like,
yeah. Though I think Chris specifically, I think you just bait him into doing koyos, right? That seems to be that's actually the way to beat Chris is just give him the breakaway so that he can mess up the koyo.
He loves koyos. He saw that one that they scored against. Who did they score that one against in the Worlds that year? Koyo got one that was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was in the third place game, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It was.
Koyo got a koyo.
Yeah. So before we started this, Olsen, you sent us over this massive spreadsheet from Bench Miner 4. And it looks like a draft tournament. There's so many amazing names on this. And what's really cool is they kept stats. So we have scoring, we have assists, we have scoring percentage on shots, turnovers, steals, save block, dabs. Like there's so many amazing numbers here. And Olsen said he wanted to have a conversation with us about these numbers and what it means for bike pool. So Olsen, what are the points you want to bring up? And is there anything you want to point out?
Hold on. For context, what year was this tournament played?
Yeah, that's important.
So, yeah, let's talk about the tournament first. So, this was Benchminer 4. This was in 2014. So, I'd been playing like 2-3 years maybe. Wasn't in this tournament. But me and my friend Chris Colo Giovanni, rookie Chris, who, funny enough, has been playing longer than me, took stats the entire tournament. So, we sat there with like a pen and paper and we're just like, oh, Kremen just shot one blocked. Kremen just shot off target or like, you know, one steal. And we kept those stats for the entire tournament. And I think it was like a really high caliber of tournament. There's like a lot of big names that are still playing today. Some of the best players in the world were there. Some of the players who are now the best players in the world are currently were at this tournament. And the one thing I saw was, this relates to kind of the defense. It's really hard to steal off the ball off a good player.
Yeah.
These are some of the best players in the world. And we're talking like 8-10 games and someone's like, oh, they had 10 steals the whole weekend and they were one of the best people on steals. You know, that's like a steal game, maybe two.
Here are the players that are in the double digits. Chris Hammersley, Joey, that's from the Beavers?
Joey from Beavers, yeah.
Yeah, Joey from the Beavers. Koyo, Nick Cruz, Dusty Riggs, Andrew Whalen, and Emmett Ward. And that's it. That's an elite list.
And we're talking about hour long games. They're getting plenty of court time if they're some of the better players on the court, but they're not like, you know, it's just really hard to steal off the ball off a good player. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
So part of my defensive philosophy is that like, I only rarely go for the steal. I just go for like containment, like get them away from the shot. Yeah. And it leads to one of my other points is that, you know, in bike polo, people don't, shooting is really hard. If you're shooting like 19-15%, you know, above 15%, you're like a good shooter.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, we've had this conversation before. I think we tried to have it on the podcast in one of the earlier episodes, but one of the philosophies that Gavin and I have had for a long time is like, if you think you have more than a 20% chance to score a shot, take it, because we're going to spend the whole possession trying to get something that might would be worse. Like if you bring the ball across half and you've got a 1 in 5 chance of scoring it, just let it rip.
Not every player can do that math in their head though.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I'm always telling people like, you know, be patient, like wait for our look. Our look's gonna come, just like circle it. Like wait for the right shot. Like because that's the way the ball gets turned over. No one's.
I guess that's the other way to interpret. That's the other way to interpret that shooting is hard. We're like shooting's hard. don't overthink it. Just chuck it at the net. And you're saying shooting's hard. Make it count.
Yeah. It's just like, it's like no one's going to steal the ball from you.
Yeah.
Well, yes, they will steal the ball from me. But like, it's just so, it's so hard to do that you should make your shots count, because that's where you're going to get the turnovers off people's shots.
So yeah. Were these steals like forced turnovers? Like the player came out and actively stole the ball, or was it like, did you count just like unforced turnovers? Like, let's say like player A rides and flubs the ball and it goes off to the side and the other player grabs it. Is that a steal at that point? Or I don't know.
Yeah, that was a steal if the person had like possession of it. There was very little flubbing going on, to be fair.
Okay.
If someone had the ball and they either picked off a pass or like stole it from them, like physically, most of it was like physically taking the ball from them.
It's funny how difficult and like nuanced some of these terms can be. Like, you say like steal or like assist, and we think like, of course, we kind of know what that is. But like when I was doing the stats for Connect, I'm like, does that count as a pass? Does that count as a steal? Does that count as a possession? Like, it was just like, did this, when exactly did this possession end? You know? And like, it's, I just have to say, like, this is the best stat sheet I've ever seen. And I put hours into the Connect stats, and like, this looks way better.
No, I really appreciate you guys doing the Connect stats too. I was like, ah, someone's doing it, because I know how much work went into it.
yeah. But we had video to work off of. Like, you guys were doing this live, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard. I have a question for you, Olsen, because you say like your philosophy is really guiding the player to the boards, not going for steals. And obviously, like, we see it every rookie night you're out there. They just fly straight at the person with the ball, and it's so easy just to go around them if that's the case, and their momentum carries them out of the play. And we see really good players doing that too. They like say, okay, here's my chance, I'm gonna go for it, and more often than not they're just out of the play. But we see some players out there who are just amazingly good at timing these gambles, right? And like the most notable player is probably Andrew Whalen from the Control or the Fathoms at this point. Like, if you watch like the smack in the middle coverage from last year, all this guy's goals are off steals. He just waits in that middle second goalie spot, and as soon as you make a move to beat the first defender, he jumps on the ball and takes it from you. I mean, Sean Marsh is similar in his play style with Mosquito. Do you think there's like room for that in the game? Like, players to gamble who are good at it, maybe coming from the back line. What are your thoughts on that? Like, when are gambles worth it?
Yeah. Here's the thing. Like, I feel like I'm nowhere near as good as them. So I.
Yeah, if you're Andrew, it's worth it.
Yeah, if you're Andrew, go for it. Right. But like, I really think he's like the exception and not really.
I also think it's not a coincidence that the players Gavin just listed stole the ball and absolutely obliterated us in Calgary.
That's awesome. Like,
all of those examples.
But their whole defense is set up to put those players in a position to get steals. Like, if you watch the Mosquito play, like Will or Andrea or Darren, a lot of the times they're playing very similar to what Olsen's describing. They're facing their own net and they're just slowly winding you into the crease. And as you close the space and you try to like push the ball ahead to get a shot off, like as soon as you push the ball ahead, Sean just appears in front of you and takes it and goes the other way. And it's just like, wow, they really trapped me and sent me into their lefty. Like, it's their whole defense is set up like that.
Yeah, and it's like, it's really, it's, you have to really know how to do that. It's kind of hard to, like, because if you mistime it, like you said, you just did the rookie move, and now your momentum is taking you, like, 10 feet past the play.
Yeah. Oh, we've tried it. We're very familiar with the mistiming of the gambles. Yeah, we walked away from that tournament. We're like, we need to gamble more. And then we're like, our defense sucks now.
Yeah, it's a knife's edge. Like, there is, I think there's a balance to be struck there, because you don't want the other team to know you're never going to gamble, because then they can just walk it in and be as patient as they want. But you also need like maybe a designated player who will do the gambling. I don't know. Like, how does Moon Druid do it? That's what I want to hear.
Really, like, obviously you do have to go for that move. You have to sometimes just gamble and try to get that steal. And I, you know, maybe I'm saying this so people won't think I'll do that. And they're like, oh, he's just going to like kick back.
He's leveling up.
There we go.
Moon Druid, we actually played a pretty kind of like just flat. I mean, not flat defense, like just like a basic defense. We didn't get a ton of steals, but we didn't give off a lot of good looks either.
Right.
Same thing with Trash Fire. We just didn't give away good looks, but we weren't getting steals. Well, Nick G was, and like me and Ryder weren't. But
I think it's not a coincidence that in most of these teams and defensive schemes we're talking about, it's kind of like one player is the one that primarily is doing the stealing. And I think part of that is because the other players being so solid, they can trust. Like, if you're Andrew and you have Bruce and Matt behind you, you can trust that if you get beat for free, it's not a breakaway. Like, Matt's in net and Bruce is going to be able to rotate over, pressure the ball, and you'll have a chance to get back in the play. Whereas, like, I think it's not, I think you need, for every player that's really good at stealing, I think you also have a team behind them that give them kind of like the green light to do that, or like the insurance to go for those plays, if that makes sense.
No, I think that's a really good way to put it, because you really do need, I mean, obviously it's a team sport, and you need to, because those moves, I mean, even if you're Andrew, those moves aren't always going to work. Mm-hmm. And knowing you have someone behind you like Bruce to like, or Matt to back you up, that's like super solid.
Yeah, I think defense is like one of the most, like one of the parts of bike pool where the teamwork is like the most visible. Mm-hmm. And it's just so important to be on the same page as your teammates and to play to your strengths and roles. It sounds like, what would you say is like, do you have a certain position you like to play on defense, Olsen?
Me personally, I like to play two, which I think is the hardest position to play in defense. Oh, yeah.
Well, the other positions have a pretty clear decision-making flow chart. Like, you're covering the player with the ball, stay between them and the net. You're the goalie, keep the ball out. Like,
yeah,
the two is where it becomes a little bit more nuanced.
Yeah, and then like, especially when I'm one, I'm always like real quick to rotate out if like someone maybe gets like, even if I know I can catch up like a half step, it's like, why risk it? Let's rotate it instead. It's kind of my philosophy on defense.
I think that's the single thing that most like intermediate players to beginner players could instantly become better if they like did instinctively. Because so many times you see players like, you get beat and it's just a half step and you feel like you can get back in. But if you keep chasing the player with the ball, you kind of prevent your second defender from being able to commit to them. Whereas if you just, you go, yeah, they got me, half step, whatever. My teammates got you. I'm going to go make sure you don't have a passing target. It's like the defense evolves right away. And then you can just, you know, the play keeps going. But if you follow them and you kind of, oftentimes you end up like crashing into your teammate or boxing your teammate out. And then it's just a breakaway.
I've seen that happen so many times on plays.
Gavin had to have a very serious talk with me about this at one point.
Olsen, I guess like to kind of sum up this conversation, because these stats are really backing up what you're saying around like shooting is really hard. People aren't very efficient. So let's just give them harder shots and make sure we take away the easy ones. If you had, let's say like a third year player who's looking to make the quarterfinals of their qualifier, what would you say to them? Like, what are those pointers you give to them on defense to really help them level up their defensive play?
You just got to practice staying in front of their bike. Like when you're on defense, try to get their front wheel as close to your back wheel as possible. Face the direction they're facing, obviously. Mm-hmm. And cover those lanes. Like just doing those things will make things so difficult. And like some players have defense down really good. You'll see these intermediate teams lose like 1-0 to like the team that won the tournament that weekend.
Yeah.
And that's because they were playing just like solid defense and pick your spots and you can like sneak one out against a better team. It happens. Mm-hmm.
For sure. It happens. I've seen so many teams like they just rely on super good defense that's very conservative, and it just frustrates the heck out of the other team. So they take risks, they play three up, and then the next thing you know, it's going the other way for an open net goal, and the worst team wins the game because of it. Happens all the time. That point,
are they the worst team?
I mean, they're playing smarter and they're frustrating their team.
Sorry, real quickly about defense. I just want to get your guys' take on this. Flip the script, maybe ask you guys a question.
Go for it. I love talking.
How do you guys feel about the new meta kind of changing towards double goalies again?
This is exactly what I was going to ask, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was going to say, so like, okay, my honest take, I think that the skill level at the highest level has evolved to the point that double goalie is no longer viable. And with the larger crease, that only makes it more so.
Mm.
Because I think good teams are just going to be able to like force a crease violation or find the back door on the second goalie consistently.
Yeah. I've been really thinking about this because the crease is getting bigger and I haven't, like, not too many tournaments you go to actually play with the NAH size crease. It's one of the things that lags behind in a lot of regional tournaments. So I'd be interested to see the effect that has, especially the effect that refs actually watching for 3 seconds might have too, if that occurs, which you never something, know if it will. It's game.
Something
game.
We've talked about, and I guess I don't mind spilling the beans here, is I'm trying to force myself to start counting out loud if my teammate has the ball and I see a crease violation. Because I think it's hard. It's really hard for refs to track. But I think if you see it and you know that your teammate's looking for something and you just start counting as the off-ball player, like 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, 3 Mississippi, hey, crease, 4 Mississippi. Like, I think that's I don't think that's uncalled for. And I think that's like a lot of utility you can add as the off-ball player.
Fair. It's interesting. I wonder if you'd be well-liked at the end of the tournament for doing that. I think the thing I've been working on.
Well, get out of the crease.
The thing I've been working on, Olsen, is playing an opportunistic 2. I think if you're a team and you only have 3 players and you want to pick your second goalie, you should pick your most pivoty, mobile player you have because they have to cover up for people when they get beat badly. And that person should be looking for like sloppy ball handlers that they can trap. I think that's what you got to be doing because as much as you're saying, like, it's really hard to score, especially like against a set defense because they can guide you to the edges. If you can get a turnover against someone, like, those are the best opportunities to score because you're going the other way and it might be a one-on-one with the goalie. So I'm always looking with my head up if I'm the 2. Like, if someone's sloppy with the ball or they push a little too far forward, I'm going to beat them to that ball and I'm going the other way for a breakaway. That's, I think, the evolution we're seeing in some of these second goalies is the ones that are doing a great job are solid on the crease line. They can pivot to cover multiple ways and directions. But then they're also looking for those opportunities to get transition offense started. That's what I've been working on.
Yeah, I see it now. Like, the double goalie has gone from just like a static, like, oh, there's 2 bikes in the way now to, oh, this player is actually really good. He's formidable on defense and he's also in my way and he can move his bike really quickly and get in my way some more.
Yep.
But then it's also just like a static double goalie at times.
When you double goalie, do you think it's to the side of the crease or at the top of the slot?
It depends where the shooter is, honestly.
Like, if you're setting up off of a dead ball.
Like, oh, I'm completely different than you guys, I bet.
Yeah, like let's say we just scored a goal on the other team and the 3 of us are a team. What, like, I'm in net, Gavin's on ball, and you're the 2. Like, are you lining up at the top of the crease, or are you picking a side?
I'm lining up, depends on where the second player is. It really depends on like, the how the team? Game's going, okay. What the tendency of the ball carrier is. But usually I'm like shadowing player 2.
Okay, so like against, let's say like against Mucho, Pete and Diego are up. And
one's just trailing like, the other one looking for
yeah, one's pass. Trailing the other one. Like you're kind of, Gavin's going to follow whoever has the ball and then you're looking to follow the second as well.
Yeah.
That's usually. Not really double goalie at that point though, right? That's like.
Yeah. Well, actually I don't double goalie though.
Okay, yeah. So I guess that's the answer is like don't double goalie off the dead ball, which I actually like that a lot more.
Yeah, I don't double goalie off dead balls for sure. I mean, I do it if like things get hectic in the box and we're just like, we gotta get the shit out of here. Like, yeah, I'm throwing my bike in there. Like, why wouldn't I?
I think double goalie should be the default. Like, if you're confused and you're like, I have no idea what's going on. These guys, like the other team is just rotating the ball and they're better than us. I remember playing against the Mongrels in fall ball and feeling just totally overwhelmed by their ability to move the ball, get rebounds, pass and shoot. But we just kind of cycled like our 2 defense. Like we kept someone in net and we just cycled the 2 defenders.
Dude, we got crushed.
We did get crushed. But I also felt like it was somewhat effective. Like that forced, they were at least moving the ball and taking more difficult shots as opposed to before where it just felt like an unstoppable, like it almost felt like a goal every time they got the ball.
I'm thinking like if this is just so lefty brain, but if I'm playing, I want to be the 2 because if I have a righty who's the 1 and a righty in net, I can face the opposite way and have an outside mallet and we can be kind of staggered that way. Like one facing one mallet, one way, one mallet, one way, one mallet the other way. And it can cover up a lot of gaps.
Okay. This is an inside look at our team conversation. Cause I had a realization about this cause this is a real conversation we had. I think we spent way too much effort trying to stagger bikes like that and it made our defense overly complicated.
Sometimes.
So the old LA team had two lefties on it, and they would do that all the time to great effect. This was in 2012, you know, 2013.
Where should we go from here? Well, we talked a bit about Moon Druid already. We talked a bit about some of the strategy there, but I'm kind of curious because Moon Druid's like a super Boston heavy team. And you're all there practicing. So what are you guys working on for NAs? We want to just give us a sneak peek. Are there any goals? Do you guys have team meetings?
Yeah. So Moon Druid is all Boston, actually.
Can we just run through the roster?
Yeah, let's run through the roster real quick. So the team, like I was, we were talking about forming this team. I was trying to figure out who I wanted to go with. There was lots of good players in Boston. So the team got formed kind of weird. People were commenting like, oh, you guys kind of split up your club a little bit. And
yeah,
we did 1-3. Yeah. Boston did 1-3 at Eastsides, which was pretty cool. First, we had Ryan Donovan. Mm-hmm. He's like one of the, he's really good. He's super fast, wicked fast shot, super good bike handling. I think one of the best players on the East Coast for sure. We had Charlotte. Charlotte was the last addition to the team. She hadn't come out for a long time, and we were thinking like, oh, who do we have? Who do we pick up? We need to pick up somebody. And I remember seeing her at pickup, and it was that intangible thing. I was like, oh, she knows exactly what she's doing on the court. Like, she's played two really well. She looks around. She like is noting people's positions. She's like always there for the pass. Like, she has good vision. And I popped the name to my teammates, and like immediately like, oh, she's playing? Like, yeah, we'll take her for sure. And then she ended up being our captain, which I think is a really good fit.
Oh, sweet. I saw her name on the Slash Royale registration, and I was like, I don't know who this is, but I look forward to meeting them.
Yeah. We have Kevo. You can call him Kevo. He's like a vet of Boston. He also has one of the best shots in the club. If he heats up, he can score from anywhere on the court. Really solid player. The last player who also listens to the pod a lot.
We like them.
Nick Lagasse. He's only been playing like 3 years, I think, or something like that. 3 or 4 years. Obviously a few of those were during the pandemic, but he's gotten like super good in those few years. Like, I remember I was at the diner with my wife and kids like at 10 or 11 a.m. in the morning. And we're just having dinner, breakfast. And breakfast at the diner is what I was trying to say. And yes. My wife's like, hey, is that a polo bike? And I look out the window and it's my teammate, Nick. And I run outside. I'm like, hey, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I just came back from like solo polo. And I'm like, what the fuck? It's like,
that's the dedication you need.
Yeah.
That's what you want to see in a teammate.
But I know he's been playing a long. He hasn't been playing very long, but really solid. Great, great back handling. He's working on the court vision, but he's made so much progress this year. We're really excited to have him. Yeah, he could be really good. He's like, I don't know. I'm hoping he'll drag me to a championship one time.
Nice.
In a few years. But I mean, those are us five right there. And then me, of course. Yeah, our style is really really basic fundamentals things. We're all like excellent shooters, so we shoot, we play solid defense. There's really nothing too fancy about it. Tough to counter, but you know, we weren't winning games by a lot, but we were winning them.
Well, Eastside was a really competitive tournament.
Yeah.
If you have the shooters, you know, you don't need to make great A opportunities. You can just kind of come up, take a few shots. If you get a couple in, rely on your defense to win you the game. And it really seemed like that was kind of your team's calling card when I was watching the shaky hand cam Eastside qualifier, wow. Especially
Gavin,
the finals.
Gavin just out here crapping on everyone who's not connected by polo for their wow, that would... I personally love the live stream. I thought it was very well done.
I think that was Manu from New York.
For a person with a cell phone, I mean, Manu did a great job. But yeah. You know, you're confined by your tech. Anyways,
I will say finals again. Sorry, I just have to say, people filming polo games, like, it's okay to record it on your phone, not do it live, and then upload it later, and it'll such higher quality. Like, please do that, because you know, you only have like 5 viewers live anyway. Like, just record the game, put it up right after. It's so much better. You can see the ball. Like, most cell phones, they're so good in terms of image quality. But okay,
sorry, that's my soapbox. All the secrets there, Alex.
Okay. Oh, that's my soapbox.
So that's a hot tip for people live streaming. just record
or it not live streaming it. Yeah record that being it. Said we're gonna live stream slash royale because I don't listen to my own advice.
So I was gonna ask you about that intense finals game Moondruid played, because I watched it and it was pretty intense. I mean, I've gone head to head against Salem enough times to know that he's not someone to trifle with, and I mean, he was put on a show in the finals too. How did you guys kind of come together to beat Salem in that one? And I mean, his teammates were also quite strong as well, of course.
Pew pew.
Yeah, we actually lost to them the day before, early that day, because seeding went on into Sunday. Yeah, I don't know how it happened. I was like, how did we lose? Like, that was weird. Like, we got to figure out a strategy or something. And I really think if we hadn't have played them that morning, we probably would have lost the final.
Okay.
But like, so this goes back to this thing. Salem was playing like a really strong double goalie, and he's like so quick on his bike. He's so maneuverable on his bike.
People that size shouldn't be that maneuverable. It's not fair.
He was just really tough to get around. He was just taking balls from us constantly when we were bringing it up. And then we just had to like figure out, I thought that pass was safe, and it wasn't. So we just we had to like completely readjust like our playing style. And we still barely squeaked it out. I think we led for all of like 45 seconds, but it was like the final 45 seconds.
I was driving our like a van full of people back from the Northside's qualifier, because it was the same weekend, and we were driving back to Toronto, and there were like, I was in a van full, so there was like 8 people in the van. Every single person had the live stream on, so I could hear the audio, like not in sync. Like one person in the front had it like the fastest, and then it was like 20 seconds. So it was like you could hear every goal like as it was scored but delayed, and it just went back and forth. Like it was like, I'm like, who's like, I knew who was winning because I could hear the whole thing, but it's like, oh, Salem got a sick goal, that was crazy. And then it's like, oh, they tied it back up, oh, this is like, it never was like, and the whole way back, like the whole time we were driving back, like the game just kept going and going, and they're like, it's a 1-point game, it's still a 1-point game. Like it was, I'm like, in some ways that was the weirdest way to experience the game, and in other ways that might have been the best way, because then I got to go back and watch it myself, and I'm like, this is an awesome game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What were the adjustments you made? I'm just curious. You said, you know, some passes felt safe but weren't. Was there a conversation that Moondruid had going into the finals that maybe changed some things?
Yeah, definitely. I was doing too many drop passes close to him, and they got like, I think, 1 or 2 goals off of that.
Mm.
So we readjusted to be a little more patient with our looks, readjust how soon we pass. And then also, I think we said we were going to also like actually threaten him and not try to just pass around him. So like one of the goals I scored, I definitely just like, I think he thought I was going to drop it, but I just took one pedal and just ripped it in front of his front wheel and managed to get a goal.
Yeah.
Like, so respect, we adjusted a few different shot. Ways.
Nice. And then yeah, I like that.
I think honestly, Salem also played a lot that tournament for his team. By the end, I think he was just gassed.
And not to take anything away from the rest of Pew Pew, but I think Salem had like 5 goals in that game. Like the rest of Pew Pew were all incredibly good players. I think a couple of people, like I know Chris came out of like retirement for that tournament, so I don't think that was nowhere near his final form. But it's like, yeah, it was just Salem was on another level for that final.
Yeah, for sure.
Funny, I'd seen Chris play at the Thaw, and I thought I knew what we were seeing in Pew Pew when he was coming. And then like, I was like, he'd gotten so much better since the Thaw to qualifiers. So obviously he's still shaking the rust off, but.
Yeah. I remember Chris is a very good player, and was, I remember Chris just being a monster at the bench tournaments. In New York, like the East Side Bench, because that was when he played regularly.
So, I mean, you guys qualified for NAs. It sounds like you're going, which is exciting. I mean, we're excited to hopefully play. I've been ringing the drum. I'm saying Moondruid slept on out there, everyone. These people, they all live in the same city. They're practicing. They're talking constantly. They're going to come with one of the most like well thought out game plans for NAs, because there's so many teams that are just, okay, we'll take the best player from this city, the 2 best from this city, and oh, we need some other person who's free. And I just think Moondruid is going to have that continuity that's going to make a big difference. So I'm really excited to see Moondruid in Mexico, and yeah, I'm cheering you guys on because I got some bets.
I hope I can watch your games because we're not in the same group.
Let's move away a bit from just like competitive bike polo. We've nerded out on that a lot. And I'm just curious about like just your life, Olsen. You've been playing for a long time, and just how has bike polo kind of affected your life off the court? Has there been any kind of growth or just things you want to mention about that? Like, what have you gotten from this game?
Oh man, that's a big question.
It's the biggest. That's what we're here to do.
Yeah, I mean, just it's actually done like it's done a lot, and it still does a lot for me. Like even moving to Boston, like at the age I'm at, I mean, it's moved across the country and immediately had like a huge group of friends that were all super cool, like-minded people. Bike polo is rad. It's like there's no like bad. I mean, there are bad people in bike polo, but for the most part, like everyone's really cool. It's kind of weird how cool they are. I just remember when I first started, I was like pretty shy, kind of obnoxious, I guess. I like to think bike polo's helped me mature and like socialize properly. God knows it would have happened otherwise. Yeah, I don't know, man. Bike polo is just an amazing, amazing sport with just like probably the most amazing people. Like there's so many good friends all over the country. So often, like when me and Betsy drove across, Betsy is my wife. We drove across the country from LA to Boston when we moved to Boston. And we hadn't seen Brandon in Brandon from Denver Bike Polo. I hadn't seen him in years, but hit him up and he just like put us up at his place. He hung out with us. We kicked it for like a night. It was great. It was like, you know, catching up with old friends, even though I hadn't seen him in years. He like just, you know, it was like bike polo's just cool like that. It's an amazing, amazing, amazing sport.
Yeah. It's such a good network of people to know. And just because it is such a small community, there's so many pros to that as it is right now. Everyone knows everyone. You can use kind of the voucher system for each other. I vouch for them. And it's really cool just to go to any city and have friends, like you said. And it just gets me out of the house so much. I can't speak enough about that part of it, the sense of community I have. Okay, well, Olsen, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. We appreciate it. It's been a great conversation. I think some people really probably got some good pointers about defense from you and just your mentality when it comes to polo. And it's been a good talk. So thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, welcome back, everyone. And Olsen is with us again. We brought him with us. The triple intro.
Oh my God.
And he's back, and he's just in time for the mailbag. Who's going to read it? Because we don't have Liam here.
I could read it as you're like Liam for the day.
Yeah. If you want to try, it's much harder than it seems.
Yeah, I've seen that. Okay, let's see. All right. So we have just one email this week. This is from Brett from Montreal. They write, hi, Diego, Chris, and Pete. Longtime listener, first-time writer. I was thinking about how every club has probably had their moment on local news where they have the same basic story. A bunch of crazy punks are out here playing hockey on bicycles. We came out to see what it's like to play such a dangerous sport. And then someone goes on camera giving the same basic history from the Wikipedia page, where it was an exhibition sport in the 1908 Olympics, and then sometime in the 90s, bike messengers and PNW turned it into the modern format, playing it between deliveries. We've heard this hundreds of times, and while it gives a quick soundbite, I think it glosses over a lot of potentially interesting history. I think it would be a good episode, and would do our community a service to actually find and interview these people that started modern bike polo. This history is not that old, and I'm sure these people are still out there and could give good insight into what the early days were actually like, and could give a little more color than the same basic story where they tell one of us is on the news talking about our sport. I feel like y'all have gotten enough notoriety and connections to the community that it would be possible to find and talk to our founding members.
Well, I know Gavin and I had the first thought, like I'm sure we thought the same thing, which is Coach was one of the people that taught us to play bike polo, and he's in Northside's, I guess not at pickup as often as he used to be, but I guess it didn't occur to me to record an episode like this because, you know, Coach was just at pickup in Ottawa, and you could have that conversation. He has this conversation with everyone that is at pickup in Ottawa.
Right. But he wasn't even one of the founding, like we'd have to go deeper. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like we could get Angelo on, which I think that episode is coming. And for those who don't know, Angelo was at the Cycle World Messenger Championships when it was a demonstration sport and brought it back to Ottawa, one of the first like six clubs in North America or whatever. But we could have him on, and we plan to. But we need to go deeper. We need to go to those warehouse messengers that were playing on concrete and didn't know what they were doing. Those are the people we need to find. You know what I mean?
I thought you were going to say we need to go deeper and find the people that were at the 1908 Olympics.
That would be awesome. That's grass polo, though. Totally different sport. Those guys are hooligans.
Yeah.
It'd be a cool episode, though, in all seriousness. It's definitely something, Brett, we're going to look at. But if you keep calling us Pete, Diego, and Chris, we probably won't listen to you anymore.
Hey, maybe after an A's, people will be calling us Pete, Diego,
and Chris. Oh, my gosh. Probably not. But maybe.
I know Messman out of Seattle might know something too.
Not I've sure heard that he invented bike polo. This is the word on the street.
Yeah.
Do you think he'd give a good interview, Olson?
He's very intelligent, very insightful. I think he would, actually.
That's awesome. Okay, well, we'll have to get Messman on the pipeline. If anyone knows Messman or has a way to reach out to him, please let us know so that we can reach out to Messman. Does that wrap it up, boys? We finished for the night.
Yeah, I think so.
Quitting time. Well, thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. If you're still here, dang, good on you. You must really love bike polo. So keep listening, and we look forward to having you listen to our next episode. Until next time, you know, stay on your bike and keep whacking a ball. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
Goldilocks, where the crew, what's a boss supposed to do? Meet you on the polo court, you like YOLO, rock that sport. Take the mallet in your righty and the left squeeze breaky tighty. You all high and mighty, every Thursday nighty. Wheeling, jousting, 3v3, come on, rip that PBC. Courtside, grab a brew, let that conversation stew. Wonder where the cuckoo flew.